Here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
Welcome to the Russ Belville Show. I'm the host, Radical Russ, and you're the star. Your thoughts, your opinions, your America. It's we the people, not we the corporations. So let the people's voices be heard today. The phone number here is 866-5577-377. Let's get started with all the topics for the day. It's going to be quite a busy show today. And again, give us a call if you want to get involved in the conversation. So we start off today. You know, I know that a lot of you are like me. I mean, I'm just a regular guy. I'm not some pundit or politician or somebody who's been in the inside Washington Beltway. I'm just a good old fashioned guy from, well, originally from Idaho and now from Portland, Oregon. And just like you, I work a full-time job for a living when I'm not doing this on the weekends. So, like me, you probably don't always have time to catch up with the newspaper or the evening news. So at the top of the Russ Belville Show, I help you catch up on the week's hottest news topics with...
The Week in 90 Seconds.
The Democratic Senate votes 53-40 to confirm Michael Mukasey as Attorney General.
If waterboarding is torture is not constitutional.
Republicans lead the charge to debate impeaching Dick Cheney. Good work, Nancy Pelosi. But the Democratic Congress finally overrides Bush's veto on a water resources bill. Woohoo! The stock market drops over 500 points. National debt just hit $9 trillion, and now the world's top supermodel won't even take American dollars. Rudy 9/11 Giuliani's buddy, Bernie Kerik, is indicted on 14 counts of lying, cheating, stealing, and conspiring. Doggone it, he was perfect for the Bush administration.
Made a mistake in not checking him out more carefully.
The coup-installed dictator of Pakistan suspends the Constitution, and the lawyers are revolting.
Come and take a violence inherent in the system! Help, help, I'm being repressed!
Actors join Hollywood writers on the picket lines and struggle mightily to compose their own sentences.
What's at stake is the residuals off that internet stuff. We're just asking for a reasonable share of that so that we can keep our pension plan going, keep our health fund going.
Then Merck settles their Vioxx lawsuits for $4.85 billion. Gee, that's only $175,000 per death. What a bargain. And in more serious news, 2007 is now officially the deadliest year for our soldiers in Iraq. Yes, we've had 3,860 of our good servicemen and women who've lost their lives in George W. Bush's quagmire to control the Middle Eastern oil. 2007 saw that we had 857 soldiers' deaths in 2007 so far. And we still have, what, 50 days to go? The previous high was 2004 when we had 849 deaths for the entire year. Now we're up to 857. It also should be noted that out of those 3,860 deaths, those aren't reflecting the 130 suicides from our fighting men and women who have had enough and cashed in. We've also had 28,451 wounded soldiers in this debacle. And meanwhile, our Democratic Congress that we elected on last November under the promise that they would do everything in their power to get us out of this Iraq debacle, now they're talking about going into Iran. How do you like that, folks? How do you like your Democratic Congress? According to the latest surveys, the approval ratings for Congress are in the toilet. Even among Democrats, rating Democrats, the approval rating's around 22-25%. And the reason why is because we're just seeing the same old, same old. We elected these Democrats to get us out of Iraq. Meanwhile, we've got more soldiers in Iraq. We elected these Democrats to cut the purse strings to Bush's folly. Meanwhile, they're debating giving him more money. We elected these Democrats in order to restore America's good name and to return us back to the shining city on the hill, to eliminate our association with torture. And we just approved an attorney general who doesn't think that waterboarding is torture. Are you satisfied with this Democratic Congress? I know that I'm not. I know that it's time for something serious to happen. We need some serious change in this country. And it doesn't look like the current Democratic leadership is going to bite. You know, the rank-and-file Democrats, a lot of them are really, really good people who are sick and tired of this war, and they do want to stand up to this illegal president and his administration. But for some reason, reasons unknown to me, Nancy Pelosi, Harry Reid, Rahm Emanuel, these guys who are in charge of the Democratic Party in Congress, continue to make mistake after mistake. They just can't realize that the American people are behind them now. They don't have to cower in fear. They don't have to worry about Mr. 25% approval rating over in the White House claiming that they're weak on terror or that they don't support the troops. The people have seen through that. The people are way ahead of the politicians on this one. And Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid are so insulated inside the Beltway there, they can't hear the screams of the American people who want this war over, who want them to stand up to this unpopular president and his criminal administration. Let me go to my happy place for a moment here. Speaking of our veterans, I wanted to come up with some of these statistics here. We are coming up to Veterans Day here this Monday. And of course, everyone here at the Russ Belville Show completely supports the troops and stands behind our military. I am former military myself. I was in the Idaho National Guard for a good part of six years there. And my grandfather served in World War II in the Pacific Theater. And I've had numerous uncles who've also served in the military. So the first righty that wants to call me up and say that I don't support the troops has got another thing coming. The Democrats are the ones who support the troops. We're the ones who are actually the troops at one time. Dick Cheney got himself all his deferments out of Vietnam. Rush Limbaugh got his deferments out of Vietnam. George Bush had his daddy pull some strings to get him out of Vietnam. Meanwhile, it was the Democrats that served. John Kerry and Max Cleland and all these Democratic legislators who actually had military service, who are fighting to get us out of Iraq. And meanwhile, the leadership keeps stopping them, keeps kneecapping them whenever they try to do something to get us out of Iraq. Anyway, returning back to Veterans Day, the way we're treating our veterans here in America is just an absolute crime. As we look at Veterans Day here, a lot of our veterans who are coming back from Iraq are having trouble getting their jobs back. Now, we have laws in this country that when a reservist, a military reservist, ships off for active duty, they are guaranteed 5 years leave of absence and a return to employment once their deployment is done. So they're supposed to be able to go out, serve our country, and when they come back, their job will be waiting for them. Their employment will be waiting for them so they can take care of their families. But according to the recent statistic from the Department of Labor, these employers and these veterans are not getting their jobs back in a timely manner. What we found here, 23% of the reservists did not return to their jobs they had held before shipping out, in part because their employer did not give them prompt reemployment. So about 1 out of 4 veterans, when they come back, their employers are the ones who aren't supporting the troops. Their employers are the ones who are not giving their job back. And as we surveyed these veterans, we find that 29% of them said they had trouble getting assistance from the Department of Labor to help them get their jobs back, and 77%, 3 out of 4, didn't even bother to try because they knew that they'd be just facing a bureaucratic nightmare. They'd never get their jobs back. That's how we're supporting our troops. That's how America is treating our returning soldiers. Now, speaking of how America treats the returning soldiers, the other fact that came up this week that I had to take a look at has to do with homelessness in America, and specifically our homeless veterans. 1 out of 4 homeless Americans is a veteran. 1 out of 4. 25% of the people that are homeless have served our country, and this is the way we treat them when they return. Already we've got 1,500 veterans from Afghanistan and Iraq who've already been identified as homeless. And this is just four or five years into this war. And we haven't even finished this war. When Vietnam ended, it took like 10 years before we started to see the wave of homeless Vietnam veterans. We're starting to see that wave already. We're seeing that wave already with 1,500 homeless Iraq and Afghanistan veterans. And the directors, the people that work in Veterans Affairs are saying this is just the tip of the iceberg. You know, by the time this war has run its course, 10 years, 15 years, we're going to see a tsunami of these homeless veterans. What are we going to do about this? This is how the Republicans and the Bush administration are destroying our military. And if there's one silver lining to be found in this, and God knows I've been trying to find a silver lining, it may be that the Republicans are finally losing their grip on being the party of the military, of being the part, the support the troops, defend the country party. Do you think finally the Republicans or the people out there who tend to vote Republican, do you think maybe they'll start to see through this? Do you think there's some hope that maybe they'll start to see that it's been the Democrats all along who have supported the troops? It was the Democrats who've been to war, who know that war is hell, who will stand and not send the troops into war unless it's an absolute last resort, not send our troops to war based on lies and obfuscations about weapons of mass destruction? Maybe. Just maybe. We'll see in 2008 how that turns out. Now, coming up later on the Russ Belville Show, we've got some more topics to cover. Of course, we're going to take more of a look at the Democratic Congress. They actually put forth a measure to impeach Dick Cheney, and you'll be surprised who voted for it. Also, we'll be looking at Michael Mukasey, the new Attorney General, the upcoming War on Christmas, and the drug companies and the latest assaults on American health care. This is the Russ Belville Show, the home for truly radical progressives.
This is the Russ Belville Show.
Are you a gay-hating conservative busted for soliciting gay sex in a bathroom? Or a war-hating liberal who won't use the power of the purse to get out of Iraq? Are you running for president as a social conservative despite three marriages, dressing in drag, living with a gay couple, and supporting gun control and abortion rights? Or are you a president running for progressive liberal even though you voted for the Iraq war, for declaring Iran's army terrorists, and for supporting an anti-flag-burning amendment?
Now's the time for Hypocrisol. Twice daily Hypocrisol applied liberally to the anus helps soothe the pain and itching caused by having your head firmly up your ass. Hypocrisol allows oxygen to reach your brain and feelings to reach your heart. Hypocrisol is not for everyone. Ask your doctor, so long as he isn't Dr. James Dobson. Don't take if you're allergic to truthamine, Factex, or Caritol, as severe cognitive dissonance may occur. Side effects may include electoral victories, progressive legislation, and fabulous haberdashery so divine it's to die for, girlfriend. Ask your doctor about new twice-daily Hypocrisol, because it's time to pull your head out.
Oh, that's our new sponsor, Hypocrisol. Hey, I figure everybody else has a drug company sponsor. Why not me? Welcome back to the Russ Belville Show. I'm Russ Belville, and the phone number here is 866-557-377 or 866-557-7377. Just a little note from the news bag here on a recent loss here in the writing community. Norman Mailer, the famous author, Norman Mailer has died at his home, and the reason I kind of picked up on this is that Norman Mailer was born on January 31st, 1923. He's one of those celebrities who shares my birthday. That's right, January 31st, along with Tallulah Bankhead and Justin Timberlake and Ellen DeGeneres' girlfriend, Portia de Rossi. So those are those of us born on January 31st. Anyway, Norman Mailer's passed away. He was the Pulitzer Prize winner. He won for The Armies of the Night in 1968, a novel about World War II, and The Executioner's Song in 1979, which was about convicted murderer and executed murderer Gary Gilmore. Norman Mailer was an anti-Vietnam demonstrator and was arrested several times for demonstrating against Vietnam. He also once ran for the mayor of New York City, proposing that New York City should secede and become the 51st state. I don't know if that's not a bad idea, actually. Give us another Democratic state, that'd be okay. Also a blight on Norman Mailer's history. He did help to gain the release of a man named Jack Abbott, who was a convicted murderer. And after he got on parole in 1980, he committed another murder. So that was a kind of a blight on Mailer's career. Norman Mailer was married six times. He stabbed his second wife with a penknife at a party. And he was married to his fifth wife for just one day. So, almost sounds like a Republican in that respect. Anyway, Norman Mailer, we'll miss you. I really enjoyed all of your writing throughout your career. Now, back to the story about the veterans and just how we're treating our veterans as we approach this Veterans Day. It just really just makes me angry to figure how we're treating the troops. You know, the Republicans and the right-wingers always want to talk about being the support the troops party and how we on the left, we don't support the troops. You got to support the mission to support the troops, etc., etc., etc. Of course, I'm always hearing this from people who weren't in the military, oftentimes. But another thing that we're finding out here about our military and what's happening for them on Veterans Day, the soldiers who are returning from Iraq or who've been injured in Iraq, they have to take a test, a mental health test, to see how well they're holding up under the combat stress. Naturally, many of these veterans have post-traumatic stress syndromes. And once they get the post-traumatic stress or serious mental health issues, they're supposed to be removed from the field and given time, you know, given treatment in order to recover. Well, it turns out, according to the USA Today, that a lot of these soldiers are cheating on their mental health tests. They're cheating on the tests so that they can get back into the field with their buddies out there in Iraq, you know. And this is something that a lot of people who haven't been in the military don't really understand. Is that when you get down to the military level, the squad level, the platoon level, the soldiers there aren't fighting for George W. Bush. They're not fighting to bring democracy to Iraq. They're not even fighting to make it through their term or their deployment in Iraq. They are fighting for their buddies. They're fighting for their fellow soldiers. And so they feel that if they get booted out of the military for some head case issue, some mental health issue, they feel like they're letting down their buddies. And that's why they're trying to cheat on these tests in order to stay in the military. It's kind of similar to, if you want to talk professional football, it's kind of similar to football when a football player will get a concussion, will get hit in the head, and the doctors will ask him if he's okay. And of course he's going to say he's okay. He wants to get back in the game. That's the same thing that happens with our soldiers, is they want to cheat on these military tests, these mental health tests, so they can get back out there in the field. So that's another, you know, just another sad issue here, and not to blame the soldiers in any way, just a sad state of affairs that they're even subjected to this. And again, a big part of this mental health problem has to do with this Bush administration, again, not wanting to put up or shut up when it comes to fighting the so-called war of our generation, right? They sent 130,000 troops to fight the biggest war of our generation. And because of this, because of the low amounts of soldiers, they have to keep sending them in and sending them in. Their tours have been increased from 12 months to 15 months. They're no longer getting their full time off between deployments. This is what's causing the mental health breakdowns in our military. And this is how the Republicans are destroying the American military. We're lowering standards to get in the drug cheats and the drug users into
DojeJane.com.
Homosexuality akin to race or religion as something that is a protected class in this society. Which, and they always point out, they always like to say the gay lifestyle, right? We shouldn't protect the gay lifestyle. People who choose to be gay. I mean, they're not born gay. Why should we protect their jobs because they choose to be gay? Which, of course, is the most amazing hypocrisy there is out there, because there's federal protections for if you choose to be Christian, or if you choose to be Muslim, or if you choose to be Wiccan or whatever. That's right. The federal law protects you from being discriminated against your job for your religious beliefs. That's a choice. That's a lifestyle. You're not born Christian. You choose to be Christian. So even if they're going to argue that people choose to be gay, which, of course, isn't true, but even if they're going to argue that, that's the most hypocritical thing they could possibly say when they're protected for their choices. That's just amazing to me. Now, of course, George Bush has vowed to veto this Employment Non-Discrimination Act, which, of course, is a good idea from Bush's point of view, because, you know, he wants to, wants to support his conservative base and all these right-wing religious, you know, babbling biblical literalists that keep him in office. But, you know, you got to hand it to Pelosi and the Democrats for passing the Employment Non-Discrimination Act, you know, to protect gay people in their job. Because, you know, if they didn't, they could be looked at as, you know, picking on the closeted gay Republicans. I mean, don't the closeted gay Republicans deserve to keep their jobs, even if they're gay? I mean, Larry Craig, we're looking in your direction. So, yeah, this is going to get vetoed, though. You know, Bush is going to veto this thing, and it'll be interesting to see whether or not the House can muster enough votes and the Senate can muster enough votes to override the veto. I don't think it's possible. But the big controversy that came up with this Employment Non-Discrimination Act came from some gay rights activists who didn't think it went far enough. The problem was, is the Employment Non-Discrimination Act would protect gays and lesbians, but it did not include the transgendered. It did not include people who are seeking to change their gender or have different gender identities than the norm. And so the transgendered community and the gay community were fighting over this. You know, we shouldn't go forward unless we can protect the transgendered. We're throwing the transgendered under the bus. And meanwhile, the gay activists who want to see employment non-discrimination passed were saying, look, if we throw transgendered in there, it's not going to pass. If we don't throw it in there, it is going to pass. And isn't half a loaf better than none? And so that's my question to you out there. When we're trying to get our rights, when people are trying to stand up for what's right in America, do we too often let the perfect be the enemy of the good? Do we too often, as progressives, try for the whole loaf when if we just compromised a bit, we could get the half loaf? I mean, you see this in issues like gay marriage, or what I like to call freedom for marriage for gay people, in that some people think that we should go straight for gay marriage and that it should be marriage should be equal for all people, which is my position, or the position that we should settle for civil unions because that's close enough and half a loaf's better than none. That's an interesting question, and you know, it's not exactly my issue being a straight white married guy, but I still support civil rights and I still support the equality of all people under our Constitution, and can see no logical reason why we should be banning gay people from making a lifelong commitment and supporting their families just like we support our own. Anyway, that's the Employment Non-Discrimination Act. Now, another issue that came up in front of Congress, and this was Bush's first veto override. There was a water resources bill called the Water Resources Development Act, WERDA, they call it. And this bill would authorize the Army Corps of Engineers to do lots of different projects, dams and sewage projects, beach restorations, anti-flood measures. And maybe most importantly, it would authorize projects to restore parts of the Gulf of Mexico there, that are still impacted by Hurricane Katrina, and also would work on restoring the Florida Everglades. Okay, so this is a water bill that would provide $23 billion. $23 billion, you know, like, you know, 10 days in Iraq worth, right? About $23 billion to help fix a lot of these infrastructure projects. And of course, Bush vetoed it. Of course he vetoed it, right? Because it would help people. Because it would help average working Americans. And since none of you or me are named Halliburton or Enron or have a CEO behind our name, he's not interested in helping us, of course. And so President Bush, his reasoning here was saying that it was too expensive. You got that? $23 billion. Way too much to spend. That's way too much spending. Meanwhile, we got, what, $8,000 a second ticking away in Iraq. We had $9 billion in cash just disappear in Iraq. Just disappear in Iraq. But $23 billion, that's a little too much, you know, to fix dams and to fix things from Hurricane Katrina. Now, when asked about this, Barbara Boxer had this to say.
He somehow has disassociated himself from the amounts he's spending overseas.
Absolutely. And so Bush says this is too expensive. He said the same thing about S-CHIP. You know, when he vetoed S-CHIP, the $35 billion for children's health insurance, that's too expensive. Can't be spending that money. I mean, the people are finally starting to see through this, I believe. And it was nice to see the House and the Senate rebuke the president and strike down his veto. The Senate override was 79-14. And the House override was 361-54. So good on you, Democratic Congress, for finally overturning a veto. I wish it was the veto on S-CHIP. I wish it was the veto on the Iraq timetables. I wish it was the veto on the stem cells that you had overturned. But we'll take our little victories where we can get them. Keep working on it, guys. I know you can veto some more, or you can overturn some more vetoes if you just worked on a little harder. Now, the other news, and this is the big one I wanted to get to, the impeachment of Dick Cheney. Dennis Kucinich, who's, of course, running for president, the representative from Ohio, introduced House Resolution 333. This was a privileged resolution, and it was to begin the impeachment proceedings, the hearings on the impeachment proceedings, on Vice President Dick Cheney for, among other things, helping to lie us into a war, for giving up the secret identity of a covert CIA operative, and so on. So, impeachment resolution to impeach Vice President Cheney. So this resolution comes out on the floor, and the Republicans start voting to table it, right? And table it means, you know, we're going to put it aside, and we're not going to talk about it, okay? Just, you know, let it die. So the Republicans start voting to let it die. And so do the Democrats, you know, under Pelosi's leadership here. Pelosi has said that impeachment is off the table, so she's got the Democrats voting against this tabling resolution as well, or voting to table the resolution as well. So looks like the thing's going to die. When we come back from the break, let me tell you the great little story that happened here with this little resolution and how the parliamentary tricks may have finally bit the Republicans, may have finally cost them. We'll take a look at that when we come back from break, and also taking your calls at 866-5577-377.
You're tuned to the Russ Belville Show, AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
This is the Russ Belville Show, the winner of America's search for the next great progressive talk radio star.
Welcome back, 46 after the hour, talking about the impeachment of Dick Cheney, the Vice President of the United States. House Resolution 333 brought up by Dennis Kucinich of Ohio, the presidential candidate, the progressive candidate, brings up this resolution to impeach Dick Cheney. And so this comes up before the House, and they have to vote on whether they're going to debate this. And so there's a motion put forward to table the debate, which basically means put it aside, we're not going to talk about it. Then Republicans start coming out and voting, you know, to table the debate. You know, the Republicans come out and say, no, we don't want to talk about impeaching Cheney. And the Democrats, too, were voting, you know, let's not talk about impeaching Cheney. Although some of the more progressive members of the Congress were voting in favor of continuing the debate. Meanwhile, just about halfway through the voting, the vote gets up to about 290 votes to table this resolution, to put it aside. You know, it's going to die. And at that point, the Republican leadership starts to tell their members to switch their votes. The Republican leadership comes to their people and says, switch your vote to no, and let's embarrass the Democrats. That was their goal. That was their goal. Let's turn it around and force the Democratic Party to actually have to debate the impeachment of Dick Cheney. And the vote turned around. It was 290 votes to put it aside. It finally turned around and went to be 251 to 162 to not put the debate aside. 165 Republican congressmen voted to debate on whether or not Cheney should be impeached. And that's a beautiful thing, if you ask me. But what do you think about this? I mean, is this a mistake? I mean, was Kucinich putting forth this bill? Was this a mistake to start talking about impeachment? You know, Nancy Pelosi said that impeachment was off the table. So, you know, what are we doing talking about impeachment? You know, these people, these anti-impeachment people that are up in the leadership of the Democratic Party keep saying it would be a circus. It would be awful. You know, it would suck all the oxygen out of the room, and it would blot out the sun, and we wouldn't be able to work on the important business of the American people. And what would that business be? What is it that the Democratic Congress has accomplished that couldn't be accomplished if we were talking about an impeachment proceeding? I mean, is the Congress so inefficient and inept that they can't multitask? Is that the problem, that if we had an impeachment that screech, everything else has to stop while we work on the impeachment? I just don't think that's true. I think that's a cop-out. I think that these Democrats are looking more toward 2008 than they are looking toward the Constitution. They feel that if they bring up this impeachment, they'll be called soft on terror, soft on the troops, you know, bringing up a distraction during a time of war, whatever, and they feel that it'll hurt their electoral chances. Despite the fact that the American people want it. The polls now are showing that a majority of the people disapprove of President Bush's handling of his job. A majority of the people want us to get out of Iraq. A majority of the people support these impeachment proceedings. It's the most important thing we could do. There is no job higher than this job, impeaching a criminal administration that lied us into war, an administration that has destroyed our military and destroyed our reputation around the world and killed hundreds of thousands of innocent civilians. That, if you can't see that that's the most important part of your job, Nancy Pelosi, and the rest of you Democrats that voted to table this, then you don't understand the Constitution. Impeachment is mentioned in the Constitution 6 times. There is a reason why they wanted us to use it. Now, the good news is Robert Wexler of Florida, one of the 86 Democrats who voted against tabling, is on the Judiciary Committee because the way it worked out is that this bill, Steny Hoyer, worked his butt off to try to do something to prevent the debate from happening on the floor, and he ended up getting it reviewed or referred to the Judiciary Committee for further study. So they're going to try to bottle it up in Judiciary. They're going to try to get John Conyers to sit on it. We'll see how that turns out. But I need you to call your Congress, 202-225-3121. Call especially the people on the Judiciary Committee and urge them to take up this matter of the Cheney impeachment. The number's 202-225-3121. Call your Judiciary Committee members. Call Robert Wexler. Call Nancy Pelosi. Tell them it's time to impeach. I'm Radical Russ. It's 51 after.
This is the Russ Belville Show.
Welcome back. 54 after the hour. Looking at our Democratic Congress and the latest thing they've inflicted on us here in America, in a 53-40 vote, the Senate confirmed Judge Michael Mukasey as the Attorney General. Yeah, Mukasey, this is the guy who can't figure out what exactly torture is.
If waterboarding is torture, torture is not constitutional.
This is the kind of answer we're going to get from the guy who's going to be our top law enforcement official. If it's torture, then it's not constitutional. Yeah. Despite the fact that we all know waterboarding is drowning. It is torture. Everybody who talks about it says it's torture. It's been torture since the Spanish Inquisition. But apparently Mukasey thinks it may not be torture if it's done a certain way with the right set of circumstances, under the right conditions, with the right supervision. Uh-huh, right. This is our top law enforcement officer. And sadly enough, 6 Democrats voted to confirm this guy. Evan Bayh of Indiana, Carper of Delaware, Lieberman, of course, well, let's not call him a Democrat, Lieberman, Nelson from Nebraska, Landry from Louisiana, and most notably, Chuck Schumer from New York, and Dianne Feinstein from California, who served on the Judiciary Committee and switched their votes to make it an 11-8 vote to approve this guy and send him forward to the Senate for a vote. Had they voted on the Democratic side with the other 8 Democrats on the committee, he'd have gone down 10-9. He would have lost, and we wouldn't be inflicted by this torture-loving Michael Mukasey. Now, 69% of the American people are with me on this, as far as understanding that waterboarding is torture, and 58% of it say that we shouldn't even be using it, even if we need to get information out of terrorists. And yet, Feinstein and Schumer, for whatever reason, think that it was necessary to let this guy go through. Their reasoning? You want to know their reasoning and their excuse? Schumer wrote in the op-ed in the New York Times that he had to confirm Mukasey, because if he didn't, Bush could make one of those recess appointments without the consent of the Senate, and he'd send someone worse. That's the defense? The defense is we have to vote for the really bad guy so we don't get a really, really bad guy? Oh, man. Dianne Feinstein wasn't much better.
I believe the president would not send another nominee to the Hill. I believe he appointed this man because he believes he is mainstream. I believe there was even discussion about whether he should appoint him or appoint somebody who was even more conservative.
Yeah, you think that Bush has put forth someone who's mainstream? Give me a break. And furthermore, Schumer and Feinstein tried to defend themselves by saying, well, Mukasey promised he'd enforce a waterboarding ban if Congress passed a law outlawing it. They already did. McCain's Anti-Detention Torture Act there forbid waterboarding. It's already been passed, and Bush has shown he's going to ignore it. Furthermore, even if Congress did pass a law against waterboarding, Bush would veto it. And once Bush vetoes it, it would have to have a two-thirds majority in the House and Senate to override the veto. So him promising to enforce the law against waterboarding that will never get passed or never survive a veto, that's not much of a relief for me, not at all. And Ted Kennedy nailed this on the head when he talked about it. Ted Kennedy says, we are supposed to find comfort in the representation by a nominee of the highest law enforcement office in the country that he will in fact enforce the laws that we pass in the future? Can our standards really have sunk so low? Enforcing the law is the job of the Attorney General. It's a prerequisite. It's not a virtue that enhances a nominee's qualifications. Yeah, your job is to enforce the law. Promising that you'll enforce the law should not be some sort of bonus to your job here. Now, coming up in the second hour, we're going to take your calls at 866-5577-377. We're going to take a look at Big Pharma and the recent lawsuit that Merck got away with. We're also going to be looking at healthcare in America and, of course, our Lunatic Fringe Award. This is the Russ Belville Show, the home for truly radical progressives.
The winner of America's search for the next great progressive talk radio star. What did he say? Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
What did he say? We got an issue in America. Too many good docs are getting out of business. Too many OBGYNs aren't able to practice their love with women all across this country.
A wiretap requires a court order.
I repeat what I said. I truly am not that concerned about him.
I don't think I ever said I'm not worried about Osama bin Laden. It's kind of one of those exaggerations.
Major combat operations in Iraq have ended.
It's 6 after the hour. I'm Radical Russ here at the Russ Belville Show. I'm the host and you're the star. Your thoughts, your opinions, your America. It's we the people, not we the corporations, so let the people's voices be heard. Your phone number to call in and let your voice be heard on XM Satellite and stations all around the country is 866-5577-377. Now, at this time, we like to turn and do another one of our segments that we do on the show quite regularly, so enjoy as we take a look.
The lunatic is on the grass.
Now it's the time for our weekly roundup of the right wing's altered reality.
The lunatic is on the grass.
From the Guano Loco neocon chicken hawks to the evangenital American Taliban. And the cable news punditocracy. The Russ Belville Show presents the Lunatic Fringe Award, an award dedicated to the politician, pundit, or preacher who said the most ignorant, hateful, or bizarre quote of the week. You know, it's always a fun time to do this little bit because there's so much to choose from. Trying to narrow it down is probably the hardest part. We'll start off with a Hall of Famer, Rush Limbaugh. Yeah, there's always some good stuff coming out of Rush's face, and this is the latest one. Recently, they had some Native Inuit children from the Arctic Circle testifying in front of Congress about the effects of global warming and how this is affecting their villages and their fishing and the whales and the polar bears are dying and so on. So heartfelt testimony from some children, some Native children, about the effects of global warming. This is Rush Limbaugh's reaction.
Mommy, polar bears are dying and we're causing it. What are you going to do?
The Republicans are going to cut my school lunch budget, too. I don't know what to do, Congressman Mackey.
Yeah, that's it. Nothing quite like Rush Limbaugh mocking children who are suffering from global warming. Polar bears, yeah, so what? But that's not our winner today. No, that's only third place. For second place, we need to look to the new $50 million man. Yes, Glenn Beck from CNN's Headline News, who also has his own radio show, just recently signed a $50 million contract for 5 years. That's the kind of money we're looking for here at the Russ Belville Show. 50 mil, boy, we could do some work with that. Anyway, this is a oldie but goodie from Glenn Beck. This was just after Katrina happened and everything went down at the Astrodome and the Superdome in New Orleans. This was Glenn Beck. This is what $50 million will buy you on the conservative airwaves.
But the second thought that I had when I saw these people and they had to shut down the Astrodome and lock it down, I thought, I didn't think I could hate victims faster than the 9/11 victims.
Yeah, that's what $50 million buys you on the conservative airways. But even that, even that is not our winner for the Lunatic Fringe Award because, of course, it's November, and as the holiday season rolls around, we have to turn to Bill O'Reilly for some true wing nuttery.
Tis the season. As you know, if you've read my book, Culture Warrior, many secular progressives despise Christmas, want to wipe it out in America.
That's right. Wipe it out! Wipe out Christmas! Get him! Get him! Look! A sleigh! Get him! A reindeer! Kill it! Kill it! Come on. This war on Christmas thing. Bill O'Reilly's been working on this for a long time. As if us progressives don't enjoy Christmas. As if we don't have children and like to take them to the little Christmas shows and take them to take pictures with Santa. No, no, we're the evil secular progressives. So he had this guest on from Denver, and he was talking about how in Fort Collins, Colorado, they've made this new task force to come up with these rules about Christmas decorations, that they should be as inclusive as possible, you know, have just white lights on the Christmas trees and don't do any overtly religious themes. And this is Dan Kaplis is his name. He's a right-wing talk host in Denver. This is what Kaplis had to say on O'Reilly's show.
This sounds like something out of the old Soviet Union, and people need to be very aware that this group on the left is mobilized, they're sophisticated, they're determined, and if you don't stand up and fight for your culture, they will take
away. All right, what group?
Kaplis is right. This is an assault to diminish Christmas for secular progressive reasons, and Fort Collins played right into there.
So Bill O'Reilly, for demonstrating the fear-mongering of Karl Rove and the Christian supremacist views of Jerry Falwell, you're the winner of today's Lunatic Fringe Award. Oh, man. This is crazy, crazy, crazy worldview that they come from, this war on Christmas, that somehow if we are a more inclusive and tolerant society, that somehow that's bad. Somehow we're trying to kill Christmas. It couldn't be further from the truth. You want the real war on Christmas? I'll give you some real war on Christmas. How about all those toys coming from China that are poisoned with lead, that are killing our kids? How many kids are going to open a present that could possibly kill them on Christmas? There's your war on Christmas. You want to talk war on Christmas stuff. And the Bush administration continues to put people in the positions of power that are supposed to be overseeing consumer product safety, and they continue to cast a blind eye, and with that whole let's do free trade with China thing, let's ship all of our jobs over to China where it's nice and cheap, let's ship them all over to China where we don't have any environmental regulations or health and safety regulations to work with, so our kids get poisoned by their toys on Christmas. There's your war on Christmas. And did you catch the latest toy? Oh, this one's good. This is a toy called Aquadots. It's this really popular toy. I don't know too much about it other than it's called Aquadots. But here's the kicker. They put this glue on the Aquadots to, you know, to kind of keep them together. And they decided that the glue they were using was too expensive, so they decided to go with a cheaper type of a glue, to cut some corners there in the Chinese factory. Well, it turns out that the new glue that they use, the cheaper glue that they use, when it's ingested by the human body, the human body's digestive enzymes convert this to gamma hydroxybutyrate, GHB, otherwise known as roofies. Yeah, roofies, the date rape drug. You go out and get yourself a kid some Aquadots for Christmas. Next thing you know, he's passed out on the date rape drug. There's been kids that have been sent to the hospital over this, that have been poisoned by this date rape drug because of the cheap Chinese toys. There's your war on Christmas. You want to talk about another bit of the war on Christmas, Mr. O'Reilly? Let's take a look at heating oil prices. Yeah, recently the barrel of oil is creeping closer to $100 a barrel, and this is going to cause real world problems for people right around Christmas time, especially in the colder parts of this country where they depend on heating oil. The government's estimating that the average cost of heating a home this winter with heating oil will rise by 22% this year. The previous average was about $1,400. It's going to raise by over $300. $300 that you could be spending on your kids' Christmas toys, trying to find one that's not poisoned from China. Yeah, that $300 needs to go for oil now, right? And this may be quite an understatement, right? Because the administration is crunching the numbers based on an assumption that crude oil is going to stay between $70 and $80 a barrel, when now it's up to about $100. And don't forget, when Bush the oil man and Cheney the oil man came into office in 2000, a barrel of oil cost $30. Gas was $1.47. Remember that? So we're going to go into Iraq, you know, and take care of the oil and be cheap and plentiful and free. And yeah, look what we got. Now, the other thing, too, is that the poor people who are most going to be affected by this rise in heating oil costs, they used to be able to turn to the government for some help. There's a program called the Low Income Home Energy Assistance Program, LIHEAP, L-I-H-E-A-P, LIHEAP, which gives grants to people who are having, you know, poor people who are having trouble paying their energy bills. Well, Bush has vowed to veto an appropriations bill that would increase the funding of that program by $250 million. Because, you know, $250 million, that's a lot of money. We don't want to spend that money. I mean, we could spend that in, you know, 10, 15 minutes in Iraq, right? We could be spending it there where the money could do more good, right? Yeah, so $250 million, we're going to raise that that assistance program, and Bush is going to veto it. And in Bush's budget request for 2008, he's requested a 17.5% cut in the LIHEAP program. A cut in the program. Meanwhile, we have more and more houses that are, more and more households that are qualifying for the program. This cut is going to be more than every budget increase they've had since 1981. So basically, he's going to pull us back down to pre-1981 levels. Meanwhile, the number of households that qualify for this has gone up by 78%. We've got 5.7 million families in America that receive this assistance, and we're going to cut the funding on that. We're going to put more people in the cold, more people suffering. That's your war on Christmas, Bill O'Reilly. Bush and the Republicans are conducting the war on Christmas. Now, when we come back from the break, we've got some more talk about our healthcare industry. There's a recent lawsuit with Merck, the company that was in charge of Vioxx that got a bunch of people killed. We're also going to be taking a look at Bernard Kerik, you know, Rudy Giuliani's buddy, is in some hot water, and taking your calls at 866-5577-377. I'm Radical Russ.
This is the Russ Belville Show. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
Welcome back to the show. It's 21 after the hour, and thank you for letting me occupy the space between your ears. I'm Radical Russ Belville. Phone number here is 866-5577-377. Or if you'd like to send an email, the email address is radicalruss@gmail.com. And for more information on the show, especially cartoons from Keith Tucker, you can check out the website, radicalruss.net. Now, before the break, I had mentioned that we were going to talk a little bit more about healthcare in America. This is one of the largest concerns of the American people these days. And with the recent release of Michael Moore's DVD, Sicko, the documentary on the American healthcare crisis this Tuesday, I think this is a good topic for us to bring up, especially in light of the fact of the recent settlement by the big pharmaceutical company, Merck. Now, Merck is the company, the big pharma company, that makes the painkiller Vioxx. Now, Vioxx was this painkiller that, new drug on the market, and is the big, hot, you know, pain-killing drug. And, well, it turned out to double your chance of a heart attack or stroke. And there was a numerous cases of people who had heart attacks or strokes and died as a result of taking Vioxx. Of course, this drug was completely approved by the Federal Food and Drug Administration because it was run by Bush cronies who are more interested in pandering to the business bottom line than protecting the American people. Anyway, Vioxx was facing 27,000 lawsuits over this Vioxx. And they were looking at these lawsuits as being a huge problem for the company's bottom line. 3 years ago, they were looking at possibility of $25 billion in liabilities. So Merck is really, you know, facing a difficult situation here in that they marketed a drug, and it's alleged now that they knew that this drug would kill people, and they tried to hide the evidence that they knew that this drug would kill people. That's still working its way through the courts. Anyway, Vioxx was facing all these lawsuits, or Merck was facing all these lawsuits over Vioxx. And just the other day, just Friday, they agreed to a settlement. In the U.S. courts, they came up with a $4.85 billion settlement. Now, if you do the math, $4.85 billion divided by the 27,000 or so people that were killed by Vioxx works out to about $175,000 per life. Isn't that nice to know that we can put a price on an innocent American life? We can figure that into the profit and loss statement for Merck. They can just go right ahead and say, well, you know, we'll put this new drug out because we'll make more profit than it will cost us to settle the lawsuits. That's why they're always going for that tort reform, by the way. That's why they want that tort reform so badly, so that they can cap the damages and work the damages into their risk analysis and their cost-benefit analysis. So, when you work this out, though, there was about 45,000 to 50,000 individual heart attack and stroke claims that were settled by this case. Now, that math works out to about less than 100 grand, about 97 grand per lawsuit they were able to settle for. And it works out to be about less than 1 year's profit for Merck. Right? It's not going to hurt Merck at all. Their business will go on just fine. Less than 1 year's profit for killing all those people. And, of course, the business community jumped at this news. This was good news for the business community. The shares of Merck jumped by 5% upon hearing that news. So there you go. There's some more of your Bush Department of Justice handing out these settlements to try to help their big corporate buddies in Big Pharma. Now, speaking of big money buyers out here, another healthcare issue that was important to those of us here in the state of Oregon. We had a citizen initiative on the ballot, a Measure 50, that would have raised the cigarette taxes by 84 cents here in Oregon in order to pay for children's health care. And this measure was defeated about 60% to 40%, and defeated 60 to 40 in Oregon, primarily due to big tobacco. That's right, your big tobacco companies came in and spent $12 million on ads, a record, $12 million on ads to defeat that cigarette tax, which would have brought health insurance to 100,000 Oregon kids. The tobacco people outspent their opponents by 4-1. They just outspent them. And according to our governor here, he says they just bought the election. Now, I'm a progressive. I'm a liberal. I stand up for, you know, fair taxation and helping out our citizens and definitely for getting our kids health care. But enough with picking on the smokers, okay? I know this isn't going to get me fans on the left wing, but I am sick and tired of constantly picking on smoking and tobacco taxes to try to raise money for our kids. This happened with S-CHIP, too. They're going to raise the cigarette taxes. Cigarette taxes affect poor people. You know, poor people who are addicted to smoking, because it is a drug, are going to have to pay that tax. It most disproportionately affects poor people. And when you start raising those taxes on a drug that people are addicted to, before long you start to have a prohibitionary effect. We've seen this in Manhattan, where there are gangs fighting over turf over which they can sell contraband cigarettes. What they do is they go down, because in Manhattan, the cigarette costs is like an extra buck a pack. It's like $7 a pack. It's crazy in Manhattan. So they can take a van and drive it down to Virginia, where the cigarette taxes are almost non-existent, pack that van full of smokes, take it up to Manhattan and sell it on the street corner as if it were, you know, pot or coke or anything like that. And since they can sell it for $5 a pack, you know, lower than the $7 or that's being charged in Manhattan, they can make about $50,000 profit on a van load of smokes because the taxes are so high in Manhattan. So we continue to pick on these smokers, pick on the cigarette taxes. Why should smokers be the ones that pay for kids' health care? Isn't that all of our responsibility? The reason why, of course, is because it's politically possible. It's easy to pass a tax on smokers. There's not enough of them to complain. But we should all be paying for our kids' health care. And if we're just going to tax one particular element of society, why don't we start taxing the rich? How about a yacht tax? How about a caviar tax? How about a Lexus tax to pay for our kids' health care? I'm Radical Russ. The phone number here is 866-5577. 377. What do you think? Should we be taxing the smokers to pay for kids' health care? I don't think so. Let's just tax everybody to pay for the kids' health care. 28 after the hour. We'll be right back after the news break. This is the Russ Belville Show. Now, when I left before the break, I was talking about health care, and here in Oregon, we just had an initiative that was voted down, 60-40 here, that would have raised taxes on tobacco, raised taxes on cigarettes, in order to pay for kids' health care. And believe it or not, this is something that I do not support. Now, don't get me wrong, I support children's health care, and I think we should do everything we can to get more kids insured, but of course, I support socialized health care. I support everyone getting health care. It's a responsibility to our fellow citizens that we ensure that our people are as healthy as they can be. It's good for all of us. But the Republicans, what they've done over the past 30 years, they've spent a lot of money and time on this, is they've recast the idea of taxation as some sort of punishment, right? They see taxation as something that we do to punish the successful. We punish the rich by taking their money and giving it to the undeserving poor. That's the way they see taxation. And they use it in their language. I mean, you'll hear them always talk about tax relief. Right? Tax relief, as if there's some sort of problem with taxation, as if you're being afflicted with taxation. And then the person who relieves you from your affliction is a hero. They're a winner. They're the great reliever of taxes, right? And that's the way Bush has been trying to position himself. So they come out and they say that taxation is some sort of punishment. And what that does is it distracts the American people from what taxation really is. A shared responsibility. Taxation is the money we pay as our admission slip to a civilized society. You know, we didn't build this country. This country was built for us. And when we show up, when we're born, we owe with what all of our previous generations have put forth for us. And the more successful you are in this country, the more you're making benefit off of the infrastructure and all the taxpayer money that came before you. So you naturally have a higher responsibility. It's the old Spider-Man ethic, right? You know, with great power comes great responsibility. So when it comes to tobacco taxes and taxing just cigarettes, just one particular product, this is where I have the problem. We should all be paying these taxes. This should be a shared sacrifice. And really, it's not like we really need to pay any more taxes anyway. Just repeal Bush's tax cuts for the upper 1%, we could pay for health care for everyone in this country. And the whole rest of the world is laughing at us. They are just laughing. Well, maybe they're crying when they think about what we're going through. But with our health care system and just how bad it is in this country, we've got 47 million people who are uninsured, 9 million uninsured children. And the Republicans are completely out of touch on this. Speaking of one of these out-of-touch Republicans, former House Majority Leader Tom DeLay, the Republican from Texas, was in the United Kingdom the other day giving a speech about this, talking about health care. And while he's talking about health care, he predicted that if a Democrat is elected president in 2008, he or she would try to install a universal health care plan similar to the system in Britain. Yeah, that we all are going to fear that, right? We would hate to have to, you know, be able to go to a doctor and, you know, not go bankrupt. That would be terrible. That would be awful. And so did how did the audience in Britain respond to this idea that if a Democrat was elected, we'd get universal health care? Yeah, according to the AP report, it says this possibility received thunderous applause from the people, from the British that were listening, right? So DeLay goes on. He's trying to save the speech, right? He goes on and he says, by the way, there's no one denied health care in America. This is Tom DeLay's quote. There are no people denied health care in America. There are 47 million people who don't have insurance, but no American is denied health care in America. And according to the AP, the audience responded thusly. Yeah. See, the point there that DeLay is making is, sure, nobody's denied health care in America. There's a Supreme Court decision that says that any emergency room has to take any person who's having a health care issue. That's just the way our law works. That's the way our Constitution works. You cannot deny care to someone who needs it. Now, paying for it, that's another question. See, that's what DeLay is ignoring here, is the fact that, yes, there are 47 million people who can walk into an emergency room and get their health care. Then they get the bill. Then they get the bill that bankrupts them. Over half of the family bankruptcies in this country come from medical bills, come from people being unable to pay their medical bills. This is what these Republicans don't understand. And it's going to bite them. This health care issue is going to catch them in this 2008 election. The polls are starting to show that health care is one of the top concerns of people over terrorism, over Iraq, over the economy. Healthcare, because we see too many of our friends and family stuck in these healthcare traps. And the system is just so broken. Recently, there was this was just a couple of days ago, where there was a company called Health Net Inc., one of the largest health insurance in California. And this company was paying bonuses to their employees based on how many policyholders they could drop. Yeah, yeah, let that sink in for a second. Your job as a healthcare analyst is to read people's policies and find a way to disqualify them, find a way to get them off of their insurance. And between 2000 and 2006, because of this this policy, this company was able to avoid paying about $35.5 million in medical expenses by canceling about 1,600 policies. That's the way it's working these days. All right, let's go to the phones here. The phone number here is 866-5577-377, and we're going to be speaking here with Jorge in Las Vegas, Nevada. Jorge, welcome to the Russ Belville Show.
Hey, how are you doing?
Well, so far, so good. What's up?
I'm actually a conservative, pretty much as far right as you are left. And as far as Cheney, I would love to have the argument because the Democrats would lose the argument. It would be the impeaching Cheney because there's nothing there.
Nothing there to impeach Cheney for.
It's all accusations with no support. It's traditional Democrat trying to criminalize policy differences.
I see. Criminalizing policy differences. Okay, so you don't see Cheney as being complicit in the outing of a covert agent.
She wasn't covert at the time. She commuted.
She wasn't covert at the time. Wait a minute. Hold on, Jorge. Hold on. Hold on. Time out. Time out. Who decides who someone's covert?
She was not covert at the time, sir.
No, no. Hold on. Hold on. Jorge. Jorge. Jorge.
Jorge. To the CIA.
Jorge. 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 Hold on. Which organization in the United States government gets to make the decision whether or not someone's covert? Who defines that?
The CIA.
Right. And according to the CIA, she was a covert agent. The people from the CIA themselves said that she was covert. So you can't come here and say, oh, she wasn't covert. Everyone knew who she was. No, they didn't. Her whole company was ruined.
They also said there was WMD in Iraq. So if you want to go, just because the CIA says it doesn't make it true. She computed in
The CIA said there was WMDs in Iraq because Cheney's people were down there pressuring the analysts to accept the wisdom of some guy named Curveball and some of these other Iraqi defectors who would say anything to get their way, to get themselves out of the country. Jorge, thanks for your call. I can't go on with this anymore. I'm sorry. I got to cut you off on this. I got a break I got to get to. But, yeah, this idea that she was just that everybody knew who she was and she wasn't covert, that's been debunked so long ago. Don't call me up with that kind of crap. You got to give me a better argument than that. 43 after the hour. I'm Radical Russ. We'll be right back after this short break.
This is the Russ Belville Show, the winner of America's search for the next great progressive talk radio star.
47 after the hour. It's hard to believe there's still those people out there that don't believe, that are believing, they're drinking the Kool-Aid with regards to Valerie Plame Wilson and her role in the CIA. The woman was a covert operative. The CIA itself has said that Valerie Plame Wilson was a covert operative. Now, whether or not people in the Washington establishment happen to know that is irrelevant. If she was covert and you happen to know that she was covert, then it's against the law to reveal that information. Covert is covert, no matter how many people might happen to know about it. It's a status that's designated by the CIA, not designated by how many people actually don't know what she does. Okay? So even if there was 5-6 people in Washington that knew who she was and what she did, that doesn't revoke her status as covert with the CIA. And furthermore, this isn't something that, when Cheney's office leaked this information, it wasn't something that just harmed Valerie Plame Wilson. She worked for a company called Brewster Jennings, and this was a CIA front company. One of these companies, they have dozens and dozens of employees all around the world faking like they're some sort of energy trade company so that they could help get to the bottom of weapons of mass destruction. The whole idea of why we supposedly went to war in Iraq. And Cheney just floats her name out there, gets his people to leak it out there to Novak. It gets leaked all over the place, ruins this woman's career, all for political revenge. And you don't see that as enough of a reason to impeach the guy? Well, let's give you some more reasons. How about Cheney's secret energy task forces, where he's got the people from Enron on there conspiring to ruin the California energy markets in order that Gray Davis will look bad so they can get GOP Arnold Schwarzenegger in there as the governator? How about that? Or how about Cheney's people constantly going down to Langley and down to the CIA to pressure the analysts down there, many of whom have testified to the pressure coming from the vice president's office to look the other way on the conflicting reports about the weapons of mass destruction in Saddam Hussein's Iraq, who was pressuring those guys to come up with to make the facts fit the policy, according to the Downing Street memos. There is more than enough to impeach Dick Cheney over, and more than enough to impeach President Bush over. And furthermore, the American people know it. The day that that Kucinich's resolution to impeach Cheney hit the floor, there was an overload of calls to the congressional switchboard of people supporting this impeachment resolution. The people are behind it. The people are screaming for it. You want to know why the Congress has a approval rating that's lower than Bush or Cheney? It's because they're falling down on the job. They're not representing the American people. We want impeachment. We have had enough. We want someone who's going to stand up for the Constitution that we all love and cherish. This is not a kingdom. This is not an oligarchy. This is the United States of America, and we live by the rule of law, and that law applies even to the vice president. It's 50 after the hour. I'm Radical Russ. We'll take your calls at 866-5577 in our last segment, coming up right after the break.
This is the Russ Belville Show.
Welcome back. It's 54 after the hour, and you're listening to the Russ Belville Show, the home for truly radical progressives. If you didn't get a chance to call in today, you can always send me an email. The email address is radicalruss@gmail.com, and the website is radicalruss.net. You can leave your comments there as well. We'll be here every week at this time on your XM satellite or your local terrestrial station. Check my website, radicalrust.net, for more details. But now we're in the speed round. This just gives me a chance to go through some of the miscellaneous stories that had kind of ended up on the back burner here while I was covering some of the others. And so here's one. Bernard Kerik. Y'all heard about Bernard Kerik. This is the former buddy, the police commissioner of Rudy Giuliani back when he was in New York. And most famously, Giuliani recommended him to be the director of Homeland Security, using the old apartment there as a love nest for him and Judith Regan, right? So he was just getting it on, getting a nasty on there in the place that was supposed to be for the 9/11 workers. He was also named in a civil suit in 1999 as an architect for a system to force prison guards to work for Republicans for free in their off hours. Yeah, and of course, his mob ties. His best man at his wedding, Lawrence Ray, was a guy who was indicted in 2000 with some other organized crime figures as in a scheme to manipulate the stock market. And last but not least, Kerik is now stiffing the law firm for $200,000, this law firm that helped keep him out of jail. He's stiffing him for $200,000. This is the guy that was a close Rudy Giuliani confidant. So when the press caught up with Giuliani on the campaign trail to ask him about these 14 indictments from a grand jury, this is how Giuliani justified it.
I have pointed out that I think I made a mistake in not checking him out more carefully, but when you balance that mistake against all the successes that we had and the reality that you make some mistakes and you make some correct decisions, I think the overwhelming record is a record of great success.
Now, for one thing, that's got to be the longest Giuliani clip I've ever played that didn't have this in it.
September 11.
But apparently the excuse here is that, well, yeah, sure, he was a crook and a criminal, but he did a lot of good things, too, and it all works out in the end. You know, the end justifies the means. It all balances out. If we only did a few crimes, but meanwhile helped a lot of people and put a lot of criminals in jail, then it's all okay. It all comes out in the wash. This is your modern conservative thinking. And this is coming from the Republican leader in the presidential race. The guy they want to anoint president thinks, well, it's okay. It's no big deal that he did all these. He had mob ties and that he was, you know, scamming people and evading taxes. It's no big deal as long as he was serving the greater good. And this is the typical Republican mentality. They're willing to let their leaders do anything so long as it's all in the pursuit of the greater good. And it's up to us to stand up to it. Now, I am Russ Belville. This is the Russ Belville Show, the home for truly radical progressives. I want to thank you for tuning in and remind you that we will be back here next week. Same bat time, same bat channel. Check out the website at RadicalRuss.net. Send me an email at RadicalRuss@gmail.com. Or just tune in next week and call in at 866-55-77-377. I'm Russ Belville. It's been a lot of fun. I hope you're enjoying your weekend. And as always, go Pack Go. See you next week.